On last week's Jury Break, Rebecca began a personal story about her brush with true sadism in the BDSM community. For those who haven't listened to the episode, Rebecca met a man online who identified as a sadist, a man who worked to conform to the standards of our society and not hurt others, regardless of his inclinations. He had other submissive women, but none that lived with him. As such, he was searching for a live-in sub, and that's where Rebecca came in. Despite some understandable concerns, she decided to meet him in person to explore whether they were a suitable match.
So we go through all these negotiations. I get on the plane. I show up. First thing we do is we sit in the airport bar, one of the many bars there. And this is where our real negotiation takes place, face to face. He acknowledged all of my hard and soft limits. One thing in particular that was a hard limit for me was verbal humiliation. That is a hard limit for me. I do not enjoy it whatsoever. I get no pleasure out of it, and it's sort of a trigger for me. So that was on my hard list. He, on the other hand, really enjoys verbal humiliation, physical humiliation, mental. He likes to mix that in with his physical sadism. So that was one thing that we had to negotiate, and he agreed to not go near that, among other things. And this is where he really filled me in on what his expectations were for me for this week. And we can get into that here in a second. So he tells me all of the things that he expects, and literally it was like when you hear the word slave, it carries certain connotations, and what you would think of a slave, you know, when you hear the word slave and you think of what a slave is, that was pretty much exactly what he was looking for. Slaves as I know them now is very different than that kind of a slave. So he explained to me all of the things that he wanted. He had very strict timelines for my day. Went through all of the things that he wanted, and we negotiated on a few of them. I negotiated to get a half hour of every day completely to myself at any time where I can go and be alone and not have to wait on him or be around him, that I can just have that time to step back, take a deep breath. And he accepted that. I also requested to have like a safe place in the apartment, that if I went to that place, that it was sort of like, not necessarily like a safe word, but it just gave me an opportunity to step away for a moment that would not be included in my half hour me time. Because like in my half hour me time, I really wanted that to be able to, you know, get on my phone, check my Facebook, you know, do all those little things for me that I like to do in my day. Whereas this safe place is more like things are getting too intense. I need a timeout. I'm going to go to my safe place. So he totally understood that. And then he asked me, are you sure you want to do this? It was going to be for a whole week, and the whole week would be very intense and difficult and trying, and I was ready. So I consented, and we started immediately right there in the airport.
This is an announcement. The following material is graphic. I know I've said that before, but it seems even more appropriate now. If you are a sensitive listener, or there's anyone in the vicinity under the age of 18 or 21 or 40, just maybe hit stop.
So one of the things that he was very interested in doing with me was behavior modification. It can be kind of difficult, and it can be tough. So, for example, I'm a light smoker, but he had been a smoker for most of his life, a heavy smoker, and so he really, really hated cigarettes. He hated smokers. So he took this opportunity to do behavior modification on me, and basically he set the rule that I'm allowed to smoke. I can smoke, you know, whenever I want to, as long as we're not in a car together. I have to do it outside. And if I smoke, I will get a punishment. And his preferred punishment was spanking. So, of course, you know, we walk out of the airport and I'm nervous and I am just itching for a cigarette. And I'm like, you know, he said I could. Why not? Let's just start now. I know it's going to happen eventually. So I lit the cigarette and he kind of gave me this terrifying grin. And he says, okay, so we're starting now. And I said, yeah, I just really need one. He's like, all right, then. So we walked to the car, and he had parked the car very far away. And I got my punishment, my very first punishment, right there in the car, in the parking lot of the airport. Yeah, so, I mean, it's not like we're just playing these roles. Once we agree and consent to, you know, our negotiations and everything, We really step into these. I mean, sometimes it feels more like the vanilla world is the world in which we are pretending. If I didn't have to work, if I didn't have bills, I would live this lifestyle all the time. I've lived in the vanilla world for so long that I'm good at it. And I can get through my day just fine and interact with people and not, you know, tip them off that I am something different. But honestly, it's not so much an act for me to be in this dynamic. It's more of an act for me to be outside of it. So, you know, having him spank me right there in the parking lot, it was like being home, like, oh, here I am. Okay, we're in our dynamic now. Finally, you know. And he was not afraid to do it right there. It was over the clothes. You know, obviously I was not exposed. We were in public. But that was my first punishment spanking from him, my first idea of what was to come. And it really surprised me. It was enjoyable. You know, as I said, I'm a masochist. I enjoy pain. It was really enjoyable up to a point. Because it was a punishment, he had to take it to that point to where it was not fun. And it took probably a good, gosh, I don't even know, it's hard to gauge time when you're in the middle of an act like that. It took a while. You know, he didn't, you know, immediately just start wailing on me. You know, he obviously worked my skin up to that point because it was my first spanking. But yeah, it was very painful and surprising. And I was very excited because I'd never had anybody who had been willing to inflict that kind of pain on me. So after this first little experience, this first little idea of what I had in store for the rest of the week, I was very grateful that he went to great lengths to force me to be safe. I don't think it was necessarily because he didn't trust himself. As I said, he's been in this lifestyle off and on his whole life. He already has three other submissives. But, you know, lacking empathy, I think he was safeguarding me against himself just in case. It was also a learning tool. I mean, being safe and setting up safe calls is very, very, very important. I didn't know about these things when I first got into the lifestyle, and I made some really dumb decisions and could have honestly been one of these people that you would hear about on a true crime podcast. Luckily for me, that didn't happen to me, but it could have because I didn't know about how to be safe. He had instructed me to give his information to a trusted friend, phone number, address, a copy of his driver's license, email information, that sort of thing. So I gave it all to my trusted friend and she and I set up my safe calls. So twice a day, I would have designated times that I had to call her. Every day, it was a different time. And when I sort of expressed that to him, I didn't tell him the details because he told me not to. But he said, well, don't just make it a safe call. He goes, take it an extra step further. Use your brain, figure that out. So I set it up to where when I would call, she had to talk to me. We couldn't just make it a text. And she would ask me a specific question, and I would have a specific answer. So that allowed me to, in case I was in trouble and he knew that I had a safe call or I informed him, like, hey, I have to make a safe call or else you're going to be in trouble, that if I answered her incorrectly, she would know. So, you know, she says, you know, what color is the sky today? And if I said black, maybe the color I was supposed to say was red. that I said black, she would know, she's in trouble. I got to call the cops right now. So these kinds of things. So each call had a different question with a different answer. I mean, we really took some time to make sure that this was very safe. So immediately upon reaching his apartment, we began. Part of his requirements for a live-in slave was that I was to be naked and collared at all times in private. So we did a little traveling on this trip. It was sort of a vacation, I suppose, at the same time as a trial period for us. You know, it would be the same rules in the hotel. Naked, collared, and on my knees by his side at all times, facing him. I didn't really get a chance to watch like a lot of TV. He would play music or, you know, be on his computer working or whatnot, and I would just sit there quietly. And these things, all these things that I'm about to describe, all started out easy, and they progressively got harder. The idea was to see if we could, between behavior modification and really intense protocol, mold me into the slave that he wanted. It kind of helped because I was already a domestic submissive anyway, so that gave us a jump on that. But it was really just to see how pliable I could be. And really, I mean, honestly, being naked in front of somebody all the time really puts you in a mental state. It puts you in this mindset where you're very vulnerable. It's a little humiliating. And for me, that kind of humiliation is okay. He enjoyed using me as human furniture, which also makes you feel more like property and less like a person. So he would have me get into positions where I would be a table or I would be an armrest. You know, he'd lay his arm on my head or have me bend over, you know, to be either a standing table or a kneeling table or a footstool. He really enjoyed using me in that way, making me like property. And I enjoyed that as well, because it's a challenge to me. It was not exactly exciting. It's just more of a challenge. Like, how long can I hold this position? And how long does he need me to be a footstool? You know, how long can I keep this glass of ice on my back without spilling it? It really keeps me focused on him and not on other things that may be going on in my mind. I am a person that worries and stresses about everything, every little thing. So to be doing these things is very therapeutic for me, to be able to take all these things and totally wipe them off the table and focus all of my attention on this task that he has set before me. It really helps me. So, you know, here I am, I'm naked, I'm serving him, I make food, I'm doing all the domestic things that he wants, and he starts, you know, changing things a little as we go, intensifying things, so I never really know what to expect. So all I can do is just continue to be attentive and wait for his instruction and see what he wants next. You know, so we graduated to me bathing him and, you know, I mean, even doing personal care things like trimming his toenails and, you know, just whatever he wanted, he could have. And none of these things pushed any of my boundaries. They didn't cross any hard limits for me. They're things that I'm familiar with doing. So they felt very natural. I mean, even though you don't, you know, I think most people, if their husband asked them to trim their toenails, they may be like, ugh, like what? Why? But for me in that place, it was just, yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, BDSM and DS relationships can be very, very intimate because we don't withhold what we want and we don't withhold what we don't want from others. So it becomes extremely intimate and very intense. And so even something as small as that was sort of leading into this week of forming me into what he wanted. And it wasn't all just, you know, me being like, you know, a domestic slave and just cooking and cleaning and running around doing this. No. At any given moment, he would put me in the corner, tell me to go to the corner and get in my position, which was a floor bowing position. So I would be on my knees, my bottom would be up, my arms laid out flat in front of me, like above my head, with my forehead touching the ground. And he would leave me there sometimes for hours. And I was only ever allowed to speak either when spoken to, or I would request permission to speak freely. But unless it was a dire situation, I was not allowed to talk, which is a whole other mental exercise of its own. It's very difficult to go from being used to talking all the time to being forced to not talk. So yeah, he would leave me like that for hours, and he would come to me. This is also kind of hard to talk. It's hard to tell people because, like, people, you know, can judge and they don't always understand. But to be left in the corner like that, silent for hours, and he would come over to me and use me however he wanted. And if I began complaining, or, you know, if I would be like, oh, ow, ow, or whatever, he would say, did I tell you you could speak? And so I would immediately silence myself. So I learned how to quietly and appreciatively take whatever punishments or pleasures that he wanted to inflict upon me at any given time. So yeah, he would leave me like that for hours and use me off and on. And whether using me meant having sex with me in whatever way he wanted to, or whether using me meant just simply inflicting pain on me because he wanted to, you know, using clothespins on my genitals, or pouring hot wax on me unexpectedly, doing some knife play. And on occasion blood play. So I hope that I'm conveying what it was like, to be in that mental space. And of course, you know, as things went on, things got more difficult, things got more intense, and we really progressed further, and pushed both of our limits, really, to see just exactly how far we wanted to take things. And how far that I physically or mentally could take things. I never did have to use my safe word. We used a color system of green, yellow, red, which is a pretty standard in the community. Lots of people use that, especially for like pickup play, or if you go to the dungeon to play with someone. Green, yellow, red really works well. Green obviously means I'm good, I'm enjoying this, keep going. Yellow is sort of a warning. Like, hey, you're really pushing me. I don't want to use my safe word. You know, maybe change your tactics a little. And then red obviously is the stop. We're done. That's the safe word. He liked to push me to yellow as much as he could. He would push me to yellow, and sometimes he'd push me to yellow, and then he'd change direction, and then he'd push me almost immediately to yellow in another direction. He was really just feeling me out and testing my limits. So in public, when we would go out in public, which we did almost every day, we would walk around the city. I was to walk a pace behind him with my head down and to his right side. So he always knew exactly where I was, because he didn't want to have to look at me. He just wanted me to follow in tow and know where I was. So he also liked to make me sort of a pack mule. He enjoyed carrying around a tote with him for work. It contained his laptop, notebooks, files, whatever. But during that week, I carried them. And if we stopped and did any shopping, I carried those too. You know, we'd go out to eat, and he always started eating before I could. I'd have to wait for permission to start eating. He knew my dietary restrictions and my health issues, so he ordered all the food for me. I never got to choose what I wanted to eat. And it's, and I can see where some people like Carl or even people who are more open-minded than Carl can hear these things and think, oh gosh, that sounds awful. But to know that another person knows you so well that they can even pick out your food for you and they do it right every time, it's such a feeling of being cherished and cared for. It's hard to explain. So I really enjoyed that. Now, but you know, this point, it's like midweek. I've only had maybe 4 cigarettes total so far. Normally, that's my max for a day. But the spankings were always getting more intense. And every time I'd light up a cigarette, that look on his face, I just knew I was in for it. He was so pleased and yet at the same time disgusted that I was smoking. You know, he'd progress from his hand to a flogger to a paddle to a wooden paddle. You know, he had different small single tail whips that he enjoyed, and he had some really nasty canes, thin, mean little suckers. He had one that was rattan, and the other was, I don't know if it was aluminum, some kind of a metal. And we progressed up to these more painful spankings and punishments. I'd really gotten good at not talking and not complaining and being in this mindset 24 hours a day, minus my safe call times or my half hour to myself. It really does do a number on your mind. I, at that point, was very happy to turn over all of my power to him. You know, it was a gradual thing. You know, at first I was a little more reserved and he didn't push me so hard. He didn't, you know, require too much of me. And then every day it got a little more intense. And I was enjoying it. He wasn't crossing boundaries or anything to where I felt unsafe or that my consent was in peril. So I got to a point where I dropped all my guard and just completely gave myself over to him. And that's when we really, really connected in this way. He had full control. I had no control. And we were both completely immersed in this lifestyle and in our protocols. The only real thing that I ever kept in mind was my safe word. And I trusted him so much at that point that I knew that if I had to use my safe word, that it would stop. You know, we hadn't had an instance with that yet, despite all of the stuff that had gone on. And he didn't want it to get to that point. So he would slowly push me and push my soft limits, but never crossed into my hard limits. The end of the week, we had an event planned. He was going to show me off at the local dungeon. He was sort of a prominent player in his local dungeon. People knew him. He had friends there. He'd never really taken one of his other submissives there. So he was really looking forward to bringing me in there, his slave, his trained pet, and showing me off. So that's kind of what we'd been building up toward. So as our week came to a close, you know, I was very much in this mental state. It kind of felt like it was the whole world to me at that point because we'd been so isolated, so closed off. I wasn't isolated from my friends or family. You know, I still had my safe calls and my me time, but even in my me time, all I could think about was him. I'd been subjected to, you know, physical humiliation that really put me in a meek and lowly place, which I enjoy, and subjected to a lot of physical torture. He really introduced me to a lot of extremely painful things that I never would have guessed would be so painful. You know, between bondage and at times isolation, like that whole scenario with Troy being in the closet, we did sort of a similar thing. However, I was physically bound to his bed for most of the day. On one of those days, he had me bound and gagged, and when you're gagged, you run into an issue of safety, especially for like a safe word. So like if I was in peril, it's a little iffy to have your submissive gagged and not be able to hear a verbal safe word. So he instead used an item in my hand. It was like a jingly ball, like a cat toy almost, you know. So I would hold that in my hand, and I held that in my hand all day because that was my safe word. So he'd go in the other room, watch TV, eat some food. I was hungry. You know, I was getting cramping in my legs, but I knew I could take it and I knew I could do it. And I wanted to see how far I could push it because I wasn't really in any immediate danger. You know, these are the kinds of things that went on during that week. So at the end of the week, he was very excited, really looking forward to going to the dungeon. We arrive there. I already know the protocols. I already know that when we're walking together where I'm to stand, I already know not to ask questions. He had my identification to give to the door person. I didn't do anything. I just kept my eyes on him and let him guide me through this new experience because I had never... Well, I'd gone to my local dungeon several times for meetings and demonstrations and educational purposes, and I would watch other people play at the dungeon. I had never actually been with someone or been a participant in any way. So I was very nervous. But I knew that if I just kept my attention on him, that he would guide me right through it. So I didn't have to worry about what other people were thinking or if I looked stupid, or I didn't have to worry about any of that. All I had to worry about was him. So that made that experience very easy for me. We walked in. There was sort of an area where we could gather our things, put other things in lockers. And he ended up handcuffing me. He had brought his handcuffs that had a length of chain between them. So it wasn't a too restrictive handcuff. It was enough that I had some room to move around. There was probably about, a 4 to 6 inch length of chain probably between the two cuffs. And he attached a metal leash to my collar and walked me all through his dungeon, showing me off, never really introducing me to anyone, but just, letting me be seen. He was so very proud. I had smoked 2 cigarettes that day and had not been punished yet, which that day I was a little curious as to why not, because typically after smoking, he would punish me immediately because he just couldn't wait. He just could not wait to punish me. But that time, he hadn't punished me at all day. So I wasn't sure. I was like, did he forget? Or is he, getting lax? Or am I going to get away with this? No. He saved those punishments for the dungeon. He had brought a paddle with him, a wooden paddle with holes in it. And he brought his, I believe it's called a dragon's tongue or a dragon's tail. I can't remember which. But it's like a single tail whip, which is very short, and it can be extremely painful. So he brought all those things, and he gave me my punishment right there in front of, all these other people who are also, playing, and they're chained up to crosses, or they're having fire play done. There was a fire play scene going on at the time. Just people everywhere. There was a gal in a cage who was being suspended with rope, not by the neck, but by all other parts of her body in a very beautiful way. And all of her clothing was being cut off of her with a knife, So here I was in the middle of everything getting my punishment. And I was very excited by all of this. And I ended up actually surprising him because I was able to push myself past what he even thought I could do as far as taking the punishment. He started out easy, worked his way up, started using his different tools that he brought with him. And I had become so strong over that week and so excited by pain and excited because here I am and I'm on display and people are watching, that I was able to push myself pretty far. He kept checking in with me. you know, what color are you? Are you green? Are you yellow? I was good. I was like, green, just keep going. Now, granted, the flight back, you know, the next day was extremely uncomfortable for me, because my punishment had been just so severe, and I had really let myself push into these limits of pain levels. Honestly, I had trouble sitting down for about a week after that. But that just kind of goes to show you, like, how these relationships can build up the way they did, that they do. Like how you saw in that text, it's like, it seems that throughout all of these deliberations that we've been listening to.
Just a quick interjection. Rebecca uses the name Carl a couple times in the next minute or two. I think she means Troy.
It seems that throughout all of these deliberations that we've been listening to, that Carl always wants to push for more. And I can totally identify with that to an extent. Both parties become comfortable with their level of intensity and their level of risk. And once they feel fluent in these things, then the natural progression is to the next risky level, you know, to push a little further. And when you get comfortable with that, you push a little further. And because of the scenario that I was in, it was very isolated and focused. It was almost as if we had been in like a year-long relationship together because of how focused it was. Like it went that quickly, the progression. But even with that progression being said, even if Carl and Sam, we ended up parting ways after that. We both agreed that even though we had a great time and we really enjoyed each other, the polyamory for me was just not what I was looking for. And being so far apart, it would be difficult to arrange meeting and being together for any length of time. I knew at that point, after that week, I really knew a lot about myself, about what I wanted and where I wanted to go from this point. I had some new ideas and new fetishes that I wanted to search, you know, research more and get into that he didn't really care about. But it took that week to understand who I was and what I wanted. So we both knew that that was the right path. We parted ways at the airport. You know, we had a final lunch together as peers, discussing everything that had happened and gone on. And even as peers, even at that point when we had both stepped out of these roles and were on equal footing, I still wanted to reach over and cut his food. And I still wanted to get his drink. It was so hard to stop those actions because it was so ingrained. And I liked it. So it was a little tough that last meal because he'd keep reminding me, like, no, sit down, no, sit down. So we parted ways, and that was that. I've had very little communication with him since then, you know, an email here and there. But he always, you know, told me that if I ever wanted to come back or get away for a while and, you know, enjoy some more pain being inflicted upon me, that I'm always welcome, which is not something I would do, obviously. I am. But I've always held that as, it's always been a experience that I can look back on and know how close I came many times to feeling like he was dancing on my consent line. And he knew he was going to push to that length. I mean, basically, in the beginning, he told me, be careful how you negotiate. You know, I will fulfill and come right up to that precipice. I've always held it. It's always been an important part of my BDSM education, that experience. I definitely learned a lot. And that was the one time, and I'm glad that I had this experience early on, because it really made me think about my consent and my hard and soft limits. Because if I didn't have something on my hard or soft limit list, he would go for it until I had to put it on one of those lists. You know, I didn't even think about my hair. You don't think about things like that when you're trying to talk about hard and soft limits, but I had not said that I have a hard limit of him cutting my hair. And so when he produced the shears and began snipping, I was immediately just, I was mortified, and I was like, "Whoa, yellow, yellow, yellow." And he's like, "Well, you never put this on your list." And I'm like, "Well, I didn't know." You know, he said, "Well, that's the point." That's what he was trying to make his point, that in certain scenarios and relationships, you have to be careful of what you ask for and what you don't ask for. And of course, you know, the hair went on my soft limit list. And so he did enjoy cutting my hair slightly. Obviously, he took me to a beauty shop to get it trimmed up afterwards. So it wasn't like he was being irresponsible or hateful with his sadism. It was just really all about being in control for him, having the power, and knowing that I would do these things to a point. I know that he would never ask me to do something that would compromise my job or my friends or my family, because that's not good for anyone. The point of these relationships is to better yourselves and be the best you can be. And I know that there are people out there who don't necessarily abide by those rules. And those are the people you have to be wary of. And in this case, you know, deciding if Samantha is one of those people or not is going to be really tough. I think that now we're starting to see more of these intimate conversations between the two of them, you know, these documented text conversations, emails. I know that there are a lot of things that will be coming up soon, and I'm already starting to get an idea of what they may or may not be, including subspace and all of these very interesting topics. We're really going to start getting into the depths of BDSM. And how they can play into mindsets, and whether or not Troy was able to make these decisions and say no. But coming from a place where I feel like I have a lot in common with Troy to a certain point, I always knew that I could say no, that I could use my safe word. And I never got myself into situations where I couldn't. I never would ever play with someone who I felt uneasy about, or I felt like they were putting on an act or a show. I always, in my interviews, test people when I interview them, and I don't use simple yes and no questions where they don't have to elaborate on their answers. You know, it's all about being smart and being safe, and always knowing that you can say no. What it comes down to is, where's your limit? When do you want to say enough? And for someone like Troy, I mean, maybe he didn't know when enough was enough. Or maybe Samantha didn't know when enough was enough. So I hope that this sort of gave you some insight into some of the darker aspects of BDSM and the mental mindsets that can happen in these relationships, the intensity levels, the kind of dark sides, that you really have to have these golden rules of being safe and sane and aware of the risk and consensual in order to play in this way.
I'd like to thank Rebecca again for her honesty and openness with us. And I'd like to express personal relief that her encounter with the sadist ended safely. I'll also make this announcement. Rebecca did us the honor of going into greater detail about the way the sadist pushed her limits during their time together, physically. I deemed it a little too graphic to air during this episode, but I think it's important I make it accessible to anyone who wants to hear. So I'm going to be posting it in the Facebook group Deliberations Room. It's a private group, so this means the explicit sound clip won't show up in my friends and family members' feeds who don't listen to this podcast. Forgive me that selfishness. Search for Deliberations Room on Facebook if you want to hear it. And I hope anyone listening who's interested in exploring BDSM takes Rebecca's warnings and advice to heart. In 2 days, episode 10 drops, in which Samantha Hall takes the stand.